This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome to New Books Network. I'm your host, Kaveh Rafi. Today, it's my pleasure to be speaking with Professor Ali Mirsepasi about his book, The Discovery of Iran, Taghi Irani, a Radical Cosmopolitan, published by Stanford University Press in 2021. Professor Ali Mirsepasi is Albert Gallatin Research Excellence Professor of Middle Eastern and Islamic Studies at New York University. He's Director of Hagop Kwarkian Center for Near Eastern Studies, and also Director of Iranian Studies Initiative at New York University. He's author of numerous books and edited volumes. To just name a few, Iran's Quiet Revolution, The Downfall of the Pahlavi State, 2019, Iran's Troubled Modernity, Debating Ahmad Fardid's Legacy, 2018, Transnationalism in Iranian Politics, Called Thought, The Life and Thought of Ahmad Fardi, 2017. Just give us a few examples of many books and articles. The Discovery of Iran is an invaluable effort to present a thorough and well-organized account of Taghi Irani's life and thought. Irani is a key intellectual figure in the history of Iranian politics with a multifaceted personality, a scientist, a cosmopolitan, a public figure, and a Marxist. By attending to Irani, the book filled the gap in the English literature and the intellectual history in the interwar period, as well as the history of Marxism in Iran. Welcome, Professor Mirsepasi to the podcast.
Thank you. Mr. Rafi, and I look forward to our conversation about this book and both the interwar history of Iran and Taghi Irani's thoughts.
Great. Happy to have you. Let's start off, as usually doing in this podcast, by giving you an opportunity to say a little bit about yourself and where this research came about.
Well, about myself, I was born in Iran, and I went through my initial education, K through 12, in various small towns in Iran. I graduated high school from a city called Gurpayegan, close to Isfahan. And I then entered the Faculty of Law, Danishkade Hukuk, the Tehran University, majored in political science, and then left Iran and I have been living in the United States for about 40 years plus, and I am currently a faculty member at New York University. And as you said, I direct a program on Iranian studies. I have published many books. To be precise, I think I have published 2 books in Farsi. Several of my books have been translated. Most of my books are in English, about 10 books that I have written, except for one or two, all are about Iran. I consider myself an intellectual historian of Iran. So that's where most of my book focuses on. As I said, several of those books have been translated into Farsi. This particular book, The Discovery of Iran, is being translated by an excellent translator, Mr. Ramin Karimian, and Nashr Nay will publish it. And we really, really hope that this fall, a Persian version of this book will be available in Iran. I think that should be enough as far as my background is concerned.
Thank you very much. It's fascinating. I didn't know about the Farsi translation. I think that would be a great opportunity also for Persian speakers, specifically in Iran, and also the topic very much relevant even today. I think it's intellectual history, but so much, you know, pressing issues of today's Iranian debate on politics and so forth. It's great. So the book opens with a fascinating passage about the 1934 decree, whereby the foreign delegates were instructed to refer to the country as Iran rather than Persia by Reza Shah. So as described in the book, the event, you know, represent a turning point in ongoing debate about Iranian nationhood. So what's the significance of this event, do you think? And in what way did the emergence of authoritarian nationalism of 1934 and 1935 eclipse the deeper debate about modern nation state in the interwar period?
Sure. Thank you. This is a very sort of timely question at the beginning of our conversation. But I need to step back a little to provide the context for this particular opening discussion of the book. One of my arguments in this book is that there is a particular historical period in modern Iranian history that historians don't usually recognize as a specific historical period. But in this book, I am suggesting, or maybe very strongly emphasizing, that we should consider the period of 1918 to 34 or 35 as an interwar period. Of course, I discussed this in much detail in the book, but let me give you a brief version of why this matters. One obvious reason is empirical, is that a number of extremely important events happened during this period. And to consider part of this, what I call interwar period, either part of the decline of Mashruti period, or the earlier part as the beginning of rise of Reza Shah, would mislead us in reading history. And of course, historians' first aim or goal is to understand and interpret the history. So what I'm suggesting is actually very basic. It's not anything revolutionary. Is that if we try to recognize this particular historical period in its own, then we can learn something that would be very fruitful to us. Historians often argue that history is a conversation between past and present. In other words, every generation, or perhaps every other generation, needs to write its history again, because not because history changes, but because our society changes. We change, and we need to interpret our past so that it is both connected but also useful to our present. But if we don't recognize this particular period of time, what happens? So my argument in the book is that over time, we have forgotten this period. That's one. And secondly, because these years exist, no historians or even lay people would say these years did not exist. We coin other words to describe it, as Dore Harjumaj, period of chaos, or decline of Mashrute. Other abstract general terms that are not descriptive, and also how would you have a conversation between what is going on today and something that you label as period of Harjumaj? You just describe everything so negatively. We cannot produce knowledge of this particular period of time. The opening of the book that you mentioned, what happened that the Iranian government in 1934, really, it came into effect in 35, asked all foreign countries to refer to Iran as Iran and not Persia, because as we all know, most foreign countries, particularly European countries, because Iran was always Iran for most of the Arab world in the Ottoman Empire and even partly India, but for the Germans and the French and Americans and British, what we call Iran used to be Persia. So I do two things in the book, in this introduction. One is I argue that one of the most exciting characteristics of this period, interwar era, period, was an ongoing, vibrant, rather sophisticated intellectual political discussion on what I call discovery of Iran. I borrowed the term from the Indian poet, literary figure, and political thinker Tagore. Well, I borrow something from Tagore, but that's another issue. Jawaharlal Nehru, who wrote a wonderful book called Discovery of India, which actually influenced me quite a lot when I was very young. Nehru's goal of writing this book was to articulate a history of India with all its diversities in terms of ethnicity, religious beliefs, and so on and so forth, And he crafted a unifying narrative about India, so that in post-liberation, they can achieve a democratic India as opposed to civil war and infightings or exclusions of others. So what happened this period is that as the World War One broke out, Iranian government declared neutrality, but nobody cared about that, and Iran was occupied by the Ottomans, by Russians, and by the British. Germany did not occupy Iran, but was very much involved. And basically, Iranian state and the whole, what we usually call Iran as a sovereign state, collapsed. The third Majlis parliament basically had to close down. Nemayandegan, the Majlis members, and the members of the state had to leave Tehran. They created a little state in Kermanshah, but in reality, basically, Iranian state collapsed, or at least was dysfunctional. And was occupied by military forces, but also Iran as an idea, sort of the idea of Iran as a country or as a nation was seriously challenged by a new nationalist movement from the Ottoman Empire, the group that was called at the time Neo Ottomans. This is very different from the Republican nationalist of Ataturk. And these folks' argument was that the whole idea of Iran is fake. As they would say it, is that Madaniyat Iran is a fake constructions by very few tyrannical Persian elite. And so as far as this book is concerned, Iranian politicians and scholars and intellectuals, perhaps for the first time, were faced by a big movement in terms of intellectual ideas by the Ottomans, saying that Iran does not exist. Iran as a historical category never existed, and it's a fake idea. So what I call the discovery of Iran happened because, of course, of political reasons, because Iran was occupied, and because it was also challenged by what they perceive as foreigners, Ottomans, saying that that the idea of Iran is fake. So to go back to your question, this intellectual, political, cultural movement to try to, you know, to be more precise, probably to rediscover Iran, right? And by that, by rediscovering Iran, what I mean, or what these intellectuals and political figures and others were trying to achieve, was to tell history of Iran that was also of this time. In other words, in rediscovery of Iran, The idea was to articulate a sense of national identity for future of Iran. That was really what was important. So I'm sure you will ask me, and I would respond to you very specifically about some of the characteristics of these debates. And I don't want to spend by far more time on responding to your first question, but this movement that really started, I would say, in 1919, this particular rediscovery of Iran, included almost all notable thinkers, literary figures, the scholars of Iran and history of Iran, and translators, but also political figures. It was Sayyid Hasan Taghizadeh who first gathered everyone in Berlin, but of course, when the situation was more secure, most of these folks went back to Iran. And it included a variety of political positions of the left and center and on the right. And it also included people with affiliation with different members of the political elite in Iran. And this is very important. So it wasn't one argument by a group that they all duplicated each other. So we had folks like Rashid Yasemi or Nafisi or Jamal Zadeh, Ol Qazvini. We had folks, Taghizadeh, I mentioned. But we had, of course, Arani. So it was a vibrant discussion about, to use today's term, we usually call it Iranian identity or Iranian nationalism, but it was really about rediscovering Iran and making a claim for Iran. It started basically as a direct response to the New Ottomans. So New Ottomans basically said that Iran is fake. There is a group of tyrannical Persians, and they define Persians in racial terms. By their race, Persians are not smart, they're not capable of doing certain matters, and they are condemned to failure and corruption. They khianat be vatan, they don't care about their nations, so on and so forth. So this movement started mainly by Iranians in Berlin, using same racial terms, defending Iran and attacking the Turks from their own perspective. So there was nothing really interesting except for the fact that overwhelming majority of these intellectuals, like Taghizadeh, Kazemzadeh, Iranshahr, Arani, and others, were all from Tabriz, were Turks too. So in some respect, this is interesting. But overall, they used this Aryanism, what the Western nationalists use, very racialized language in both attacking the new Ottomans, but also defending Iran. But very soon, really, say in the case of Arani, within 3 or 4 years term, they engage in by far more interesting conversation about what is the relationship between Iran and its history. Because now they were conscious of the fact that for most of the past 1,000 years, Iran was part of the Islamic Arab Turkish world. So there were lots of interesting writings about relationship between Iran and the Arabs, role of Islam in Iran and the Turks, but also in terms of language, you know, what was the role of Persian language, and now that they are trying to articulate a new idea for Iran, knowing that there are millions of Iranians whose language or mother tongue, as we call it today, is not Persian. What is the relationship between Persian language and Arabic and Turkish and so on and so forth? And then also, what is the relationship or what should the relationship between Iranian culture, language, politics, so on and so forth be, and Europe and English and French, you know, in terms of languages, but also with science. What is the nature of language? What is, you know, educational system in Iran should be? And basically, many important ideas, institutions, processes that we now call as modernity were discussed with these folks. The change name, to now come back to your original question, changing Iranian's name from Persia to Iran for foreign countries, from my perspective, and contrary to the prevailing view, happened because of this impact of this debate. That there were people close to Reza Shah. Of course, Reza Shah was a military person, was never involved in this. But Reza Shah, and by Reza Shah, I really mean people around Reza Shah. Farooqi, Taghizadeh, Said Nafisi, and many others who either were aware of these debates and encouraged the debate, or they were personally involved in these debates. And they partly shared the vision that we need to craft the or rediscover the idea of Iran. So this name change happened because of what was happening during the interwar period. And, you know, if you want later, I can go into details of this. And it just, obviously, if you read the literature of during this period, it becomes clear why the name was changed. But there is also a piece by Said Nafisi explaining it, and basically that Persia or Fars is just one region of Iran or one group of people who live in Iran. Iran is a vast country where the Turks and Arabs and Baluchis and others live there, and a proper name that is of the day would be Iran, that includes everyone. Some people have missed this, and because Reza Shah's somehow close relationship with Germany and also generally speaking, Iran, there was this sentiment toward Nazi Germany, and also because the British and the French and Americans also felt that, oh, this is a statement in support of racial policies of Germany. So the interpretation, not from Iran, not from the person who I think that eventually convinced Reza Shah to change name, Said Nafisi, but from others, was that, oh, this is a racial diplomatic move. it's wrong. However, what is true about this move, which was very significant, was that 1934-35, all historians have mentioned this. This is, I'm not claiming that for the first time I am making this argument, was that Reza Shah and perhaps a few around him realized that the debate can get out of control, right? For instance, up to this time, Taghi Arani, as a Marxist, was editor of Dunya, a radical journal, and this was legal. Reza Shah's government at least tolerated it. So my argument in this book is that changing the name was also symbolically represented the fact that the government said, enough, we know what the new Iran should be. Government have decided this, and as you know, Dunya was the publication of Dunya stopped. Taghi Arani and the radicals, what we call the group of 53, were arrested. And there were a number of other events that happened, say, 34, 35. And again, as all serious historians of Iran have already said, the second period of Reza Shah's rule, which is where Reza Shah was a dictator, a sort of ruled the country as a one-man political entity, started here. And it was very unfortunate because there was a potential, I described this in later chapters in this book, that Iran could have achieved a real full-fledged, what I call enlightenment movements. It was a stop and unfinished.
Oh, thank you. So there are many important threads that we can follow. But for the sake of listeners, because we started with the big ideas, and I think that was fascinating, especially how it lends to the understanding of current political struggle in Iran as well, which is fascinating part of the history. But maybe we can shift gears a little bit to Arani's life, how his ideas shape, and especially about his travel to Berlin that also you mentioned. But maybe we can unpack more, specifically during the Weimar Republic, this cosmopolitan city, Berlin, and also you mentioned in the book about the influences in this formative years with Orientalists like Friedrich Rosen, Kaviani Press, and also very, very much Hossein Kazemzadeh, the Iran Shah, and his collaboration with them.
I'm sure that you have read this book very carefully, and you're not reminding me of all of this discussion. And really, this period requires many of us writing many books to explain. There are so much misunderstanding about this period, unfortunately. So let me briefly give you a sort of bio of Arani. So Arani was born in Tabriz during the Constitutional Revolution. In 1902 or 3, there are some debates on that, and very early in his life, his father, who I believe worked for the finance ministry, changed job, and the family moved to Tehran. He did most of the early education in an elementary school, and eventually he graduated from Darul Funun with a high school degree, and then he started at the time what equals to a medical school. He studied at the medical school for 2 years, and during this period, he became political. He didn't come from a political family, and that was particularly because of the what we usually call 1919 concession to the British, which was perceived by Iranian elite and intellectuals and Iranians generally as basically making the British Iran colony of Britain. He participated in some demonstrations against this this concession, and then he quit the medical school, and I believe there is some debate on this, but I'm almost sure it is true. Aaron was a brilliant student, and all the tests and whatever entrance exams he usually did extremely well. So he got some kind of a scholarship and left Iran for Germany, Berlin, in 21, I believe, or 20 or 21. Shortly after he arrived in Berlin, he started studying chemistry in Berlin University. But, so he is not a nationalist. He's a nationalist, and he was very lucky for a nationalist. Berlin was the center, because Hassan Taghizadeh, who was a parliament member, part of collapse of the Iranian state that I discussed, went to Istanbul and then went to Europe, ended up in San Francisco in U.S. And then in his memoir, Taghizadeh mentions the fact that he didn't know what to do in California, Northern California, San Francisco, went to New York, New York City, and in New York City, then the German counselor in the city contacted him, because Germans were against the British at the time, and they basically asked him to go to Berlin. They gave him lots of resources. He says, basically, منابع غیر محدود, unlimited resources. And Taghizadeh basically gathered all notable Iranians, آقای تربیت, محمد غزوینی, جمال زاده, کاظم زاده ایران شهر, and they created Comité Million, the National Committee, against the British. At this point, this was funded by Germans, and KAVE, the publication KAVE, was published there. So Aaron basically arrived in Berlin 2-3 years after this center was created, and very quickly got involved with the magazine Iran Shahr that Kazem Zadeh Iran Shahr published. This was a very, chauvinistic, nationalistic journal, particularly was involved with the No Ottomans. And here, Arani, being 20, 21, 22 years old, wrote several articles defending Iranian nationalism using basically racist terms of the Aryan race, Iranians are so superior, those kind of things. But very soon, when he started studying in a Berlin university, first of all, he had classmates who were particularly some were Jewish and scientists, but he also studied under very important German professors who were also, these were scientists, but they were real thinkers. And, you know, after 4 years, he basically stopped writing those kind of nationalistic things. And of course, he was always interested in Iranian literature and history, but now he became very, very seriously involved. For instance, he became a close associate of Frederick Rosen. Frederick Rosen, a great Orientalist and a scholar of Iranian literature, who wrote a very important book on Khayyam 10, 15 years earlier, and was the prime minister, not prime minister, foreign minister of Germany, Weimar Germany, but had to resign because he was Jewish. And also, this is a period where the what we now call Nazi Germany was emerging. So this whole idea of Aryanism and the kind of racism that European Orientalists articulated early on now became problematic. And Rosen in particular, in his book on Khayyam, you know, wrote about Khayyam representing the spirit of Iran, Aryanism. In the second edition, deleted the whole of those things. And Arani was part of that. Arani worked with Ghazvini, with Aghai Qani, and very, very closely with Rosen. On the one hand, on the other hand, he also became very developed friendship with some leading Iranian Marxists at the time there. And he also became close to some German Marxism and was introduced into Marxism. And basically, I believe Arani spent 6 or 7 years in Berlin. And by the time he left Berlin, he had edited several books on Saadi, on Khayyam, and others. Was a very close collaborator with prominent Iranian literary figures, and also became a mentor to many younger radicals. There are lots of details I have to leave out, but then he, in 38 or 39, I believe, he left, I didn't mean to say 30, 28 or 39, he left Berlin for Tehran because he had his scholarship from Ministry of War Education Department. He started working there, and he actually rose up. Now is during the Reza Shah, and became director of education for the ministry. And within a few years, he gathered a number of Iranian intellectuals, including. Iraj Iskandari and the literary figure Alavi, Buzurg Alavi, and him, they began publishing Dunya. And so my argument in this book is that what we should note very very seriously is Arani's writings in Dunya. Dunya was unfortunately only published for 2 years. But Arani's writings on Persian language and culture. That is where he articulated his new, and I feel very, very interesting and what I call the whole idea of civic nationalism and overall vision of a cosmopolitan vision for Iran. And of course, others also wrote essays and pieces and translations that also helped this movement. But unfortunately, at some point, the government felt that they cannot tolerate not only Dunya and radicals, but these, relatively speaking, open debates on what nature of what the future of Iran should be. He was arrested as leader of a communist group, which we now know this was false. Most of the 53 never met each other. There is no, absolutely no documentation to prove that these folks were part of a underground party or anything. And unfortunately, Arani died in 1940. He got sick. Whether this was on purpose or not, it's debatable. And he died in 1940 when he was, depending on this little debate about his when he was born, 36 or 37 years old.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, I want to come back full circle to this idea of Arani's civic nationalism. So this is in the book you mentioned this specific as a Arani's shifting away from the earlier period of idea of more ethnic ethno-nationalism to civic nationalism. And the book also you particularly specified these three mediums for modernization: the Persian language, scientific and rational thinking, and sociological materialism. That's very much entangled with Arani's new vision of civic nationalism. Maybe I'm curious if you can tell us more about because right now in current Iranian politics, still this, especially the Persian language, still on debate, ongoing debate, and this would be fascinating if you can unpack.
Well, this is another great question, but all of this to fully respond requires lots of time. I hope those who listen to our conversation would be somehow encouraged to to go to the library, or if possible, to buy the book, or wait if they want. The book in Persian would be much, much cheaper. But let me briefly explain this in a more sort of objective way, because I am personally fascinated with Arani's idea of Iran. But some of the wordings are mine. I want to very precisely discuss this. So Arani was a chauvinist, a nationalist who basically made an argument for Iran based on Iran being part of this superior Aryan race. But as I said, certainly after 1924, there is no writings or any indications that he ever believed in this. In some of the editorials in Dunya, this is later Arani, he very openly and sincerely said, I was stupid during this period. This was a period that everybody was so nationalistic in a chauvinistic way. And I said this word, this probably because I didn't know much and was young. And then he basically distanced himself from it. But he also writes several pieces of, in a very radical way, criticizing what he called Boston Girayan, these Aryanism, racial things, and basically compare them with fascism that was now full-fledged in Europe. So that we know. Unfortunately, many of us, or even many historians, it seems that have only have informed themselves of these 3-4 years when Arani was, you know, the oldest was 23 years, and there is this brand about Arani. But remember, this is during the period we often call it nation building, or Iranian nation state was built, or at least was debated, right? Dolat Millat-e Irani and things like this. So you couldn't escape from this. This was very important matter. That Arani, being a Marxist radical, most of his writings that were not on science, right, precise science, were on this matter. And you don't see Marx or Engels or those kind of things in these writings. He emphasized two things. One was that future of Iran is in the sciences. I cannot emphasize how much for him introduction of sciences in terms of the educational system, in the cases of development of the middle class, and overall future of Iran, he felt was in the sciences. And the way he understood sciences was very cosmopolitan. He describes this in various writings, is that he criticized what he called the Sunnat Girayan medievalists, who felt nothing has to be changed. He criticized what he called Farang Maaban, who felt that there is nothing new, Iranians should just copy everything that is in Europe. He was very careful and in a very clear language criticized all. And he said, look, science is of the world and Iran is of the world. We should not hesitate. We should not bring in political or cultural matters when it comes to adoption of science and technology and so on and so forth. And in fact, most of the essays and reports and translation in Dunya were on sciences. And to that extent, he felt that sometimes having Arabic words in Farsi is helpful, or Latin. But he was against over-Arabicizing or over-Westernizing Iranian culture. He said, and this came from a second kind of sensibility that Arani had, and that was that that introduction of what he called materialist thinking in Iran. Right? Now, what was called materialist thinking at the time, now we call social scientific thinking, right? Instead of conspiracy theories, instead of explaining everything through metaphysical, religious vocabularies, this was continuation of the science things that he had. And in his attempt to discover or rediscover in Iran, the term he uses is materialist nationalism. let me just briefly explain this. He basically is, so he is done with any all kind of ideological nationalism that, but he felt that there is a real reason for us to love our nation, right? And the real reason is not because its history was glorious or that we belong to a race or a culture or language or anything, because Iran is so diverse. And also, you know, he was critical of racism. He said Iran as a land, Iran as there is land, there is air, there is environment, there is historical and cultural spaces within which we grow. Our families are use these resources, and therefore this country that provides us all of this, we must love it. If there is a materialist, there is a objective, I don't know how to say it, he has a more eloquent way of saying it in Farsi. I don't remember exactly what he says, but he basically says that love of our vatan, your Keshwar, uses this, is therefore a real reason. It gives us so much. And then now I use a very precise wording that he uses. Then he says, for this materialist reason, we have to love our nation. And then he says, which means that we have to as vatan muraqabat kunim. We need to take care of the nation. So it's not that we are proud and we go and tell everybody Iran is better than everybody else, but that in our lived experience, in our daily life, we should contribute to this nation. And his reading of Iranian history is also similar to this. For instance, he has some very interesting stuff to say about Shahnameh. He has very interesting things to say about Persian language, that why Persian language played a particular role in some period and not in other period. Now, I think this is by far a more democratic, even if you want to call it radical, I would agree with that, but also both real and simple and sophisticated way of connecting to the nation. Right? And also to including everyone, of course, in Iran, but also to making case for all kind of other kind of nationalism. In other words, Indians and the Turkish folks or people who live in Saudi Arabia, everybody should love or take care of their nations for those reasons. Right? So I think you sort of mentioned this. This was also compatible with Arani's notion of cosmopolitanism, right? Of science. Of course, to be also critical, Arani struggled quite a lot on the fact that, at what Nehru also struggled. And that is, okay, so this notion of muraqabat az vatan, care of the nation, is really a democratic or republican, that's why I call it civic nationalism. We have civil duties toward our communities, small and large. So it's not cosmopolitanism of oh, I don't care. Wherever I have good time, I belong to that place. No, he's not sort of purely Kantian cosmopolitanist. But then the question is, what is the unifying element, right? In his later writings, Arani does not come very clearly and openly and make the case, but it seems to me that he still feels Persian language plays that role. And one can say, okay, that's important. We have to discuss it. Unfortunately, Arani does not discuss in any depth this issue the same way that he discussed it early on when he said the government by force should have kids in Tabriz and Azerbaijan learn Farsi and learning Turkish should be forbidden. Although he critiqued himself very clearly on those, but I believe that he needed a few more years. Or, forgetting about him, if it wasn't for the fact that in 1935, this whole movement stopped. And by the way, Kazımzade İranşar, who later actually left Berlin, went to Switzerland and created a movement for cosmopolitan peace. So these are very important. We don't have time to go into this. The intellectual movement that started this whole process of rediscovery of Iran would have achieved probably something more viable. For that reason, I call this whole thing an incomplete project. And I believe that that Arani's project was incomplete. Arani died in the 40s, and to the party later was established. But the debate and discussions after Reza Shah, lots of interesting things happened, but this conversation never continued. And unfortunately, something like this continued after the 53 coup, this was Bazgashte Bekhish, return to self. It was anti-enlightenment, anti-cosmopolitanism.
Thank you very much. I was thinking to ask you about this unfinished project. You already mentioned this. I mean, there is a lot to unpack, unfortunately, because
of time. For any both these large questions that we usually ask, I would be happy to clarify anything that I neglected to mention.
Sure. I think that was a great conversation. I really would like to have a chance to ask you about your projects at hand, books, any books you currently you're working in, and what we would be expecting for the future, which direction do you want?
Happy to. I am happy to say that I just finished two books. They are in the process, but the book that is very close to my heart is a memoir. I have been working on a book that covers my own education. When I say memoir, it's not a biography with all details. It's a book about how I grew up in these little towns in Iran, totally outside of Tehran or any big city, and what was my education, what was my relationship with my teachers, classmates, and eventually, when I went to University of Tehran, how was the situation there? And then my involvement with intellectual circles, and eventually the revolution in Iran, which was a very dramatic experience for me. This book title is The Loneliest Revolution. There is a subtitle, but this is the title, and Edinburgh University is publishing it, and it's in the process. I'm very much hoping that in 4 months, the book will be out. I have finished another book, which has nothing to do with me or modern world. It's a new study of the Iranian Muslim thinker, Ghazali. In English, usually we refer to him as Al-Ghazali, the most eminent late 10th, early 11th century philosopher, theologian, from Tus, actually, from Iran. This book is about reception of Ghazali in today's West. I don't know if you know or not, but the latest, or maybe it may be that Salman Rushdie wrote something recently, but I think I have missed. But one of the latest novel that Salman Rushdie wrote is about Al-Ghazali. There are several films and several books about him. So this is a book that I started 8 years ago and finished about a couple of months ago. This book is in process. And the very latest is that Cambridge University has asked me to consider leading a major research project on Iranian, modern history of Iranian political thought. I am talking to colleagues. I don't know if I want to do this or not, because this would be a multi-volume, huge project. But if I do it, I will probably spend the next 5 years of my life working on that.
Exciting project. I'm really looking forward to reading the books, especially the memoir. It's really interesting. Thank you, Ali, for taking your time today. I really learned a lot. I always appreciate your scholarship. It's very much resonates with me. I have enjoyed, you know, the opportunity today to engage with Arendi's ideas about this interwar period, which is your book greatly recover, especially this period, which had been little, you know, discussed. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I would send you a copy of my memoir. If you don't hear from me by November, December, send me a note, but I would make sure that you have a copy. Thank you. I enjoyed the conversation, and good luck with your future project.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.